Welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 25. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I am still Tom Merritt.
Good. That's good to know.
Did not morph or mutate in any way.
So we have a really excellent interview today. I'm really excited about it. Brandon Sanderson, who is a co-author of The Gathering Storm from the Wheel of Time series, which is awesome.
I know. We've been so excited that not only is this coming out, but we actually get to talk to Brandon Sanderson, who picked up where Robert Jordan left off and is finishing out the series. I can't wait to get the interview. But first, some quick burns.
Quick burns. News of the month. So J.C. Hutchins, who we've spoken about several times before and who I think is actually a listener of the show.
Oh, yeah. He's emailed us a few times. Yeah.
Which is awesome. His sci-fi novel, Seventh Son, has been serialized on Boing Boing. And so you can get that on his website and also on Boing Boing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've been following along. It's a really good story, as you would expect. So go check that out. Also, Owen Colfer, if I'm pronouncing his name right, I'm not sure. It's E-O-I-N. I think it's like Owen Colfer, who wrote And Another Thing, which I'm partway through, and I have to say I'm kind of impressed. I think he did a pretty good job. But he says he's not going to do it again. He's like, no way, I am not writing another Hitchhiker's Guide sequel. This was it. This was my chance. You know, I tried to do the right thing. I think I did it okay. But he does say that he thinks others should jump in. He think it'd be really fun if other people started to go into the same universe and play around with Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect. And he would like to see other people's takes, like maybe Paul Cornell or Neil Gaiman or somebody like that.
Wouldn't that be fun? I think I would actually really enjoy that, to see just some other flavors of how people take on that universe.
Yeah.
I think it would be really cool.
And I think Douglas Adams would want it that way, would like it. I think he'd be interested in that if he were still around.
Yeah, it's a really great, what's the word? Not dedication.
Homage.
It's a great homage to Douglas Adams and his works and everything that he accomplished and just his wonderful, wacky sense of humor. And I think that would be a great idea. I would love to see a Neil Gaiman take on Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh, yeah. That would be fantastic.
Maybe a little sexy.
It might. Well, that's what would be cool about seeing these different takes is like, okay, what is he going to do with Trillian? You know, like just you know, and then let's get Timothy Zahn in there and do one. You know, just see how these different authors' voices play.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah, why not?
Why
he's not?
Not
doing anything. Oh, wait. We'll find out, he's kind of busy.
Tons and tons of work. So should we get to the interview or should we talk about Mists of Avalon?
Let's talk about Mists of Avalon when we come back from the interview.
All right. Sounds good. And without further ado, Brandon Sanderson. Also, I recorded this at work with my terrible, terrible headset again. I'm sorry. My audio is a little bit on the terrible side. We have a very special guest with us today, Brandon Sanderson, who has just completed work on The Gathering Storm in the Wheel of Time series. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Veronica.
So, for our listeners who may not be familiar with your work yet, can you tell us a little bit about what you've written previously to this book?
Yeah, I wear several hats. What I'm mostly known for is my epic fantasy. I have published 5 epic fantasy works. 2 were standalones. Elantris, which was my first book, the first published one at least. I wrote 13 novels before I sold one, and Elantris was number 6. So Elantris and Warbreaker, which is my most recent novel. It is a standalone fantasy epic. Actually, I released it for digital download for free as I released it in stores. So you can go to my website and just grab a copy of that for free.
Cool.
I've also written a trilogy called the Mistborn Trilogy, which is all complete and all out in paperback now. In fact, there are these lovely box sets of it you can find in bookstores. The other hat I wear is as a children's author. I write young adult and really more middle grade is what it is. Fantasy novels about a boy named Alcatraz who discovers that librarians secretly rule the world. It is appropriately titled Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarians.
Nice. So how did you get started writing? What authors inspired you along your journey?
Well, my my story starts when I was 14 years old, actually. I'm not one of those writers who began writing in the womb, so to speak. I was not a reader when I was a kid. I didn't enjoy books. In fact, I did everything I could to get out of reading them.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. In eighth grade, I had a teacher who insisted that I do a book report and wouldn't let me wiggle out of it. And she forced me to go to the back of the room where she had one of those old carts filled with ratty paperbacks that the teachers all seem to have in their rooms. They seem to come standard issue. My wife was a middle school English teacher. She had almost exactly the same rack. And she said that I had to pick one of the books on that rack and do a book report on it. She wasn't going to let me wiggle out and pick my own book because I would invariably pick something that did not challenge me as a reader. So I searched through them and was struck by a book called Dragon's Bane by Barbara Hambly. I had this very nice cover with an elegant looking dragon on it and a cute girl. So, hey, what more do you want as a 14-year-old boy? And so I said, okay, I'll give this a book a try. I had never read a fantasy book before at that point. I had tried Tolkien when I had been a few years younger and had been, let's just say it was above my reading level. How about that? And I took this book, Dragon's Bane, and read it and absolutely loved it. I'd never quite read anything like it before. Excuse me. And over the summer that year, I got very deeply involved in the fantasy genre. Actually, the very next book that I read was Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey, which I found simply because it was next in the title card catalog. I didn't know there was a fantasy genre. I just thought, well, if there are more books about dragons, maybe they'll have dragon in the title. So I ended up reading Dragonflight and all the Anne McCaffrey books. From there, went to Melanie Ron, called Dragon Prince, which was actually next in the card catalog, and loved those, which coincidentally, all three of those have covers by Michael Whelan, which is kind of interesting, and all three write one after another in the card catalog. So I over the summer, I discovered David Eddings and Tad Williams, very much enjoyed their books. And by the end of the year, Robert Jordan released the first of the Wheel of Time books, which I read and absolutely fell in love with.
We have a lot of the same authors in common then. One of my first fantasy books I ever picked up was The Dragon Riders of Pern. And then I went on to Robin Hobb and Tad Williams. And it seems like there's a lot of authors in the same kind of group that people really get sucked into very early.
Yeah. Over the years, I would say that some of my favorites have been Robin Hobb, you mentioned. I really enjoy her books. I really, really like Terry Pratchett. I don't know if he's influenced me, but I'm in awe of him. I think he's probably our greatest living fantasy writer. Absolutely love his novels. I've recently discovered Jim Butcher's work. I've been reading The Dresden Files. Those have been my plane flight reads during the tour that I've been on. Outside of genre, I'd say the most influential authors for me were Herman Melville and Victor Hugo and probably Jane Austen.
If you ever get a chance, you should definitely check out the Dresden Files show that actually came out. It's pretty amusing.
I saw that. I didn't see any of the episodes. I knew that it was coming out, and it was part of what intrigued me, made me go look to the books. But I hear it didn't last terribly long.
No, unfortunately.
So as a fan of the Wheel of Time series, it must have been surreal when you found yourself writing The Gathering Storm. How did that, tell us a little bit about how that came about.
It happened, surreal is a good word to pick. It was a very surreal moment. What happened is, like a lot of the fans of the Wheel of Time books, when Robert Jordan passed away, I was simply shocked, completely shocked. I had been following his blog. He'd been very optimistic on his blog, we thought that he was going to make it, and then he was gone. And in a moment, it was like all of my high school friends died at once, because I grew up reading those books. They were my favorite series. I'd read Eye of the World 8 times at that point, and Rand and Perrin and Egwene and any of the characters from these books were my best friends when I was growing up. And then all of a sudden, they were gone. And beyond that, this master of the genre, I'd spent time studying Robert Jordan's books to try and figure out how to write. When I'd learned, after taking several creative writing classes, that they weren't actually going to teach me how to write. And I had been deeply influenced by his work, and then he was gone. Well, I assumed that either he had finished the book or that he had chosen someone already. I didn't for a moment think that I would be considered. I didn't apply for the position, certainly, or anything like that. I just woke up one morning, checked my voicemail, and there was a call for me from Harriet McDougall, his wife and editor, which was completely shocking and stunning. I called her back and got a hold of her, and she said she was compiling a short list and was wondering if I would like to be on the list, if I was interested in helping complete the Wheel of Time. And that's just how it happened. She just said that out of nowhere. My wife to this day jokes that I was more nervous that day than I had been on our wedding day. And she says that was just a little bit of bitterness.
I can understand, though. It's an amazing sort of out of the blue thing that might not have happened without the current communication system that we have today.
Yeah. I mean, I had plenty of time to get ready for my wedding, but for this, it just out of nowhere, really, that's the first I knew. I had composed a blog post about Robert Jordan and what he meant to me, and had posted it on my website. And that, through a series of very coincidental events, it ended up in Harriet's hands. And she had called Tom Doherty, the publisher at Tor, to get a hold of my books to find out what type of writer I was. And that's when she called me to see if I was interested. And I managed to get out a yes, though. It really was more of a mumble slash gaping, mouth gaped open sound of shock. I'm sorry,
squeaked it out.
Yeah, I wrote her an email the next day and said, "Dear Harriet, I promise I'm not an idiot. I can string two coherent sentences together." Then she went and she read my book, Mistborn. And a month later, she called me back and said, "You're the one. You're the one that I would like." It was really a combination of that blog post, plus the things that I've written about the Wheel of Time, plus finally her reading my fiction and liking it and feeling that I was a good match.
So you're obviously very familiar with the World of Time, Wheel of Time series. How do you put yourself in the mindset of writing in someone else's universe, though?
Well, you know, it's not something I ever thought that I would do. I would have said no if it had been anyone else. I didn't get into this business to tell other people's stories, to tell my own stories. And yet, the Wheel of Time is something special. Like I said, these are my high school friends, and it didn't take really anything at all. It was surprisingly easy and simple for me to do. It just felt natural. It felt right because I'd been reading about these characters for so long. I mean, I'd been reading these books before I'd been a writer, and I had decided to try and get published by Tor Books specifically because they published The Wheel of Time. That was a big influencing factor in my career and where I ended up. And so writing on this series feels like coming home in a lot of ways. I don't do anything special. I just try my best to get the characters to really feel like themselves. When I spent about 3 months rereading through the entire series, thinking about this project and wondering how I was going to approach it. One of the things I decided was that I would not try to imitate Robert Jordan's voice because I felt that would turn out to be, would sound like parody. Instead, I would adapt my voice to the Wheel of Time, with my main focus being getting the characters to feel like themselves. I felt that the Wheel of Time books are extremely character driven. And if the characters all were the same characters, then if a few of the words and the prose were different, that would be forgivable. In fact, it wouldn't even be noticeable once you got into the story. And so that was my main goal.
So that's an interesting point, because we've talked before in Sword and Laser to Timothy Zahn about working in Lucas's universe, and we've talked about Owen Colfer taking over for Douglas Adams. It's a difficult decision about how to say, well, I'm a writer, I have my own voice, but this is someone else's characters. Tell us a little bit more about how you walked that line between saying, I'm going to be true to these characters, but I'm not going to try to imitate Robert Jordan.
Yeah. When I say I'm not going to imitate Robert Jordan, that doesn't mean I don't want the books to feel like Wheel of Time books. What it means is, sentence by sentence, I'm not sitting down and saying, what words would Robert Jordan use? Instead, I'm sitting down and saying, what would the character think? What would the character say, and how would they think about about the world. I am trying to, I did adapt my voice to be a little more descriptive to match the Wheel of Time. I changed how I do viewpoint to be much more closely into the third person limited in a way that Robert Jordan used to help get the tone of the characters right. This has been a very different project, even from a lot of the other of this type of collaboration, simply because in this case, we have, for instance, Robert Jordan wrote the ending of the series himself. The last few scenes were written. And he wrote guidepost scenes along the way, some very important scenes that needed to be written. He knew his time was short, and so he focused on what needed to be done, the most important. So he wrote a lot of the prologue of what became the prologue of the first book, and then some of the pieces ended up in the prologue of what will be the second book. He wrote scenes along the way, and then he wrote the last sequence himself. And so really my goal is to get us there. It works actually very well with my process, since I generally build my plots backward. I plot backward. I build an outline starting with important events, and then I lay in the outline, I come up with the groundwork of what I would need for that event to work the way I want it to. And in this case, that's essentially what Robert Jordan has handed me, is important events and scenes that I need to get to. And then I built the outline around those scenes, fitting in other pieces and things that he'd said, doing my best to get us to the scenes that he had talked about in a way that is not diverting. I don't want people to see me in this book. I want them to see me as little as possible. But of course, Robert Jordan didn't want you to see him either. He wanted you to see the characters. So I wanted this to be as little about Brandon Sanderson as was possible for as much work as I was doing on it.
It's really interesting what you're saying about focusing on the voice of the characters rather than the style of the author. And it sounds like that's a really smart way to go about it, because then even if there's some difference in the prose, so to speak, the dialogue all comes through and everybody's familiar with it.
Yeah, I in the foreword to the book, I wrote and said, what I'm looking to do, I'm hoping will happen is, you know, if you sit down and analyze paragraph by paragraph, you can pick out words that Robert Jordan would have used. But if you just sit back and enjoy the story, I'm hoping that it will all vanish. It's kind of like, imagine that we have a new director coming on to direct the same script and the same actors. That's what I want it to feel like. Same people. You're still seeing the same people. There's a subtle difference in where the camera is going to be set up, or how a certain shot will be done, or even in editing, which scenes will be kept and which ones might be minimized or which ones will be expanded, but the characters, the actors are the same.
So I'm curious, do you have any time to work on your own projects at this point, or is your career focused on putting out the next two books and finishing up this series?
Excuse me. My primary focus is on the Wheel of Time. I didn't want this book to have to be split, but the length of the outline and the length of the book Robert Jordan promised, he had been promising for a long time that the book would be so long that they would have to sell wheelbarrows in the bookstores to get it. And the publisher made the decision, and it was the right decision. But I am very cognizant of the fans having waited for so long for this ending, because I'm one of them. And I feel a great burden and need to get this to them. And so I have had minimal time to spend on my own projects. I did take the summer off after spending about 16 months getting The Gathering Storm ready. And I revised and rewrote a book that I had been working on for about 10 years now that I really want to release. It's ready and it's time. And so I did a draft of that. It's called The Way of Kings. And it is an epic fantasy. We're going to pause here. He's bringing someone up.
Sure.
We just got buzzed.
Yeah, no worries.
The Way of Kings is an epic fantasy, beginning of a large epic of the same style, hopefully as The Wheel of Time, but done my own way. I've always wanted to do a very big epic. I think you find this among authors of my age. We all have one inside of us, and I've been planning this for a long time. I will be releasing the first book of that next year. I don't know when the second book will be written, because The Wheel of Time takes precedent. I did also write the last of the Alcatraz books, the fourth one. I may someday do more of those, but I had a contract for four, and I don't have time to write more of them now. So most everything is on hold right now until the Wheel of Time is finished.
Now, this is kind of an abstract question, but do you feel a really close connection with Robert Jordan at this point? Do you feel like, I don't know, somehow more connected with him than when you were just reading the series, now that you're looking at his notes and reading the scenes that he's written ahead of time? It must be a very sort of close bond.
Yeah, you're sort of trying to crawl inside his mind.
Yeah, I really do feel a special sort of closeness. I've seen things that no one else has been able to see. In fact, Robert Jordan didn't show his unfinished work to his wife. She wouldn't see it until 12 drafts had been done, usually. And so I'd say it's been very reverent, what I've been doing, and the chance I've had. It's like Da Vinci stepped out of his workshop, and I was the first one who got to come in and see what he'd been working on. Mm-hmm. There's a closeness now with having written on these characters that I know he loved so much, and I could see in the notes things written about the characters and his love for them and his care for them that is very, very special, and it's left me with a reverence for the entire process. I would say that I'm as close to him as someone can be to someone without ever having even met them. I never met Robert Jordan. I saw him once at a convention, and that was as close as I came. So yeah, it's kind of odd because in a lot of ways, Robert Jordan is still like this mythological figure to me. You know, this hero of lore that other people may have known, but for me, he's the wise writer that I studied. He's like the classics, and that he'll always be that to me, but I'll always have this special thing that I have that is really mine and no one else's, because no one else has ever done this with one of his books.
Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today. And for our listeners, of course, The Gathering Storm is available now. And where else can people follow your work online?
BrandonSanderson.com is where you can download Warbreaker if you want to get a free copy of that. And I have an active blog, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook. You can find all that on my website.
Excellent. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Okay.
All right, we're out.
That was fantastic. Thanks for being so generous with your time, Brandon. That was a fantastic interview.
Not at all. Thank you, guys, for having me on.
Such a nice guy.
Oh, that was such a fantastic talk. I wish we had had more time with him, but he was very patient, very generous with his time to talk to us as long as he did, and really interesting stories about how it all came about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine getting that kind of phone call, can you?
Just no.
One day, waking up, and suddenly you're doing the Wheel of Time.
He must have just been dancing around. I mean, that's hilarious.
What a great thing. So we have been actually reading a book among all this other stuff we've been doing, and that book is Mists of Avalon, and hopefully you guys have been reading along as well. I am only still like 40% done with this book.
I read it
every night.
Yeah, it seems, not that it's slow going, but it just seems like I get lulled by it, you know, and I'm reading it in the evening and I don't get as many pages because it doesn't wake you up and grab you. It's a very sultry sort of feel. So it's like I start to drift off into the mists and then I don't get as much of it read as I would like, but I am enjoying it.
Would you say it's a slow burn?
Yes, it's slow. It's a slow jam sci-fi.
You know, I've been having some issues with it. I really, really like the book. I love the characters. But there's a lot of undertones, and I just really want to know what other listeners are thinking about this book right now, because we did kind of warn that there were some religious undertones going on, and you know, it's very, you know, Christian, pagan, that strife between the two during that time, and you know, even today, I mean, you can still see echoes of that happening in the world that we live in now, and it's super interesting to be reading at this time in our history.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a Ning group at swordandlaser.ning.com if you want to talk to others who are reading it, if you can't wait for us to do our follow-up, which probably should be sometime in December, I'm guessing. Swordandlaser.ning.com, join that Mists of Avalon group. There's about 15 people in there now, so it's not too much. But Scott is in the group, and he wrote, "I finally just finished the book, thoroughly enjoyed it, and the unexpected plot turns in the last book. Also, ooh, so happy that it all wraps up, and in one book. No need to move on to other books for full closure," which is, yeah, we have had problems with that in the past. And then he says, "Now I can get back to book 10 of Wheel of Time."
Oh, jeez. I did not want to admit to Brandon that I was only on book 4. of the Wheel of Time.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to.
And that there's really, I see no catching up in the foreseeable future with everything that I want to read in, you know, right now.
It'll happen.
It'll happen. You
think?
We'll get
there. Yeah, especially now that we've talked to him, it's like I'm dying to read it. I'm dying to catch up. So
get back into it. I think my problem was that I was listening to the audiobooks. I think I need to go back and pick up the actual text
and actually
again.
Read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and
there's
we got
something about the way they read the audiobooks just started lulling me, and I stopped paying attention as much, and started losing track of some of the characters and the storylines. So I need to get back into text.
I got distracted by picking up George R.R. Martin, which we had as one of our books, and getting sucked into that alongside. It was like, I can't handle both of these at once.
Yeah, it's really hard.
So now we're waiting on George R.R. Martin to finish his book, Back to Wheel of Time.
Yes.
Don't forget to join our Ning Forum for other active conversations. There's conversations already in there about Dragon Con 2010.
Yes.
Some conversations about ebook readers, if you're inclined that way. Some movie recommendation threads going on. Lots of cool conversations happening in there. So do join that.
And we have a sponsor.
That's
right. We have a partner at StickerFoo, and you can use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfoo.com. They've got some great nerdy, geeky, sci-fi, fantasy-related stuff over there, so definitely check it out.
Help a brother out.
Help
buy some
a brother
stickers.
And a sister out. And the guy that does StickerFoo, because he's awesome.
Yeah, he's cool.
All right, well, that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed the interview. And as Tom said, swordandlaser.ning.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. And if you want to leave some comments, drop us a line at theswordandlaser@gmail.com.
We'll talk to you soon.
See you later.